Hello and welcome to The Inner Gamer, episode 188. We are your weekly dose of video game news, reviews, opinions, and discussions made for and by our listeners. My name is Brett Yanosky.
You had to make that weird, didn't you? I'm Austin Morales.
Hell yeah, I did.
And this week, I play Shadow of the Tomb Raider. Brett plays Bad North. We both jump into Call of Duty 4 Blackout. And in gaming news, someone shot at Dr. Disrespect's house. Alan Wake is coming to TV. And The Forsaken has a new raid, The Last Wish, which it took a total of about 18 hours for a playthrough of a group. That is absolutely ridiculous. And in this discussion topic, we talk about what is next for Blizzard. What cool, awesome game or franchise can they bring out? I mean, Overwatch is basically the be-all, end-all, if you think about it. But who knows? We'll talk about it all right here on The Inner Gamer. Brett, I'm going to cue that music. Welcome to The Inner Gamer.
It is September 18th, 2018. Welcome to the Inner Gamer Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, we'd love for you to support us on Patreon for as little as $12 a year. You can make this podcast better and we'll give you some goodies along the way, as including a invite to our Discord channel. You can win some free video games that come out every once in a while. You can learn about all the activities we have going on before anybody else does. A lot of good stuff comes out that way. And we just had an event this past Friday. Austin was not there. I'm sorry. It was so sad not having you there. I was like, I don't know what to do with myself because I don't have my partner in crime to like help me set this stuff up. And it was really crazy. But we had Dane there from Game Night Dallas. So it was awesome to have everything set up. And we had a blast at Pedicolis. People were moaning and throwing hardcore.
Oh my gosh.
That was awesome. Brutal.
That's awesome.
I like kicked some ass. And then I got my butt kicked by one of the developers. So that was fun. And we had a good time. People were playing all kinds of stuff.
Pretty typical, Brett.
Yeah.
Typical.
A lot of Overcooked. A lot of Rocket Fist. We tried Rocket Fist. That was a lot of fun. A lot of people playing Jackbox. Shout out to Danny Gallagher for coming out to our event. He was on our podcast a couple of weeks ago. So that was really cool. About a month ago, I guess.
Yeah, I'll say about a month.
It's been a month at least. But let's jump into the games we play this week. We got a lot of games to talk about. First up, Austin, you've been playing Shadow of the Tomb Raider. This is the third final game in the trilogy, starting with Tomb Raider 2013.
I hope it's not the final game in the trilogy.
It is of this trilogy, of this story arc. Yeah. They might revisit other games, but yeah, they wanted to make a 3-part trilogy with this new version of Tomb Raider.
Well, I hope because they wanted continue to continue with a new arc in this trilogy. Anyway, so yeah, this is the follow up to Rise of the Tomb Raider, which I played and I really enjoyed. It is very well. I mean, I would say Nathan Drake is the boy version of Lara Croft. And then now that it's been redone, better graphics, more in-depth to like these relics and places around the world. For the most part, I know it's all based in reality, at least the relics and some of the sites that people talk about. I really enjoyed that game. It came out, Rise of the Tomb Raider kind of got stiffed because it was going to come out as an Xbox exclusive, and it came out for a year. And it really took it away from being anything special because, you know, great for Xbox, but I think Rise of the Tomb Raider deserved an award deserved something. It didn't get any game of the years, at least not that I remember.
Yeah.
For those 2 years it came out, and then finally came out on PS4, it kind of got this big surge of like people who enjoyed it, but it just kind of... It kind of flew under the radar, and I felt really bad for that because they did something really special with Lara Croft, reinventing her, and having this whole new world to explore, which was fantastic. And then now we're coming over here.
Yep.
We'll just pause for a second.
Thanks.
Okay. Now you're good. Now we come to... Well, let me kind of step back for a second. So my reservations for Rise of the Tomb Raider was Lara seemed too whiny, and she seems more of a girl than she did a woman. Now, that's fine because obviously there's a character arc here, but I've played the original Tomb Raiders.
How old is she, too, in this?
I don't know.
She's younger, from my understanding, because this is before she becomes the Tomb Raider as we know it in the original games.
Right.
So she's a younger person. So I was wondering, like, is it because she's like 22 or something like that? And she's just
she is young.
Mature. Like,
yeah, I mean, that, well,
or not immature,
regardless of her age,
like,
that's how she comes across
annoying,
anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it kind of seems like she is a younger person. I don't ever remember anyone saying anything about her age. I'm sure it's out there somewhere, but she seems really whiny. And to some degree, I can put that past me because I used to play all the other Tomb Raiders. Tomb Raider, like the Tomb Raider, was like one of my first games I ever played as a child. And seeing Lara as this like strong woman who would go around and just, you know, kick ass and solve these mysteries and go up against some kind of like, what's the right term for it? Supernatural entities, was like stuck with me through my childhood up until now. So having a different take, obviously things are going to change, and that's fine. So what I was hoping for with this game is that we're going to see Lara finally become the Tomb Raider that those who've grown up with the series know and love, and she's going to actually turn into a woman, like a strong woman. She is strong in this game, like, don't get me wrong, but she's very whiny. She's more of like a call.
Yes.
Yeah, so I mean, to put it,
in Tomb Raider 2013, she was 21 years old. So 21, like, she was 21 in this trilogy when it started.
I got you.
So if that gives any context to that,
right?
She is young, so like super young.
Yeah, that is really young. I mean, there's a balance that can be found there between, you know, her being, I mean, I feel like she's a little more girly in this one, which is fine. Like, I think that's great. It goes with the character and what we've seen so far. So my hope is that she becomes a woman at the end of this game, like a strong, fierce, more of like hardened, put a bad term, warrior, like at the end of this. And so right now what I've played has been pretty fun so far. She's still that same person, which is understandable. I've hit the first like major plot point, which is propelling the story forward. And I'm not really impressed with where we're going right now, but there are some new changes in this game that I'm really enjoying.
Yeah.
So for at least the past one, she has a sidekick called Jonas, which is like a
sidekick.
I call him a sidekick.
Okay.
In the last one, like, he was there, but he wasn't there that much. He was more like radio chatter, like, hey, Lara, blah, blah, blah. And like being your other guy outside the where you are and what you're doing, and just kind of helping you. And this one took a new role. Like, he's a little more prominent character.
Yeah.
He's standing up for himself and like doing things that he wants to do and like what he thinks is right.
Yeah.
And there comes a part where you see it from the very beginning of the game, their plane crashes. And so now they're in the jungle together, and there's a lot more bonding between the two. So it's a lot of character development. And that's really nice to see, when in the other ones, it was just you running around.
Yeah. So did you meet Jonas? What, you didn't have Jonas in the picture in the first one, right?
I don't remember.
Okay.
That's been a while.
I was
the second one, yes.
I was wondering, when that interaction came to be. Because I was thinking, like, the first Tomb Raider was like, or like Tomb Raider itself was like a largely solo experience. I didn't realize the second character. So that's cool.
Yes.
There's somebody else.
So that's why I call him your sidekick, because he was there, but he wasn't there.
Are they there in the capacity that, like, you know, using Uncharted as a comparison, that, you know, the blonde girl was with Drake?
Oh,
like, is Jonas there in that capacity? Where, like,
no, it's not like
they're helping you get through, like, or with Sully, Drake and Sully.
Yeah.
Where, like, they're navigating and they're like always together and they're helping each other get through gameplay, components and stuff like that. Is that how this relationship is?
It's much more like that now. Not to that degree. Like, that, they're pretty, like, you know, tied together in a way.
Yeah.
But this is like they move that aspect closer together for these two characters. So, like, they're feeding off each other. We're starting to learn more about Jonas.
Yeah.
And what he does, Lara has to react to now, you know? Yeah.
It's always just like, with Jonas.
So far,
mostly.
So it's been nice to see that change, because I'm curious to see where the relationship builds in the future. And now it's not just Lara creating the story. She's having to work off other people, which is interesting too.
Yeah.
A little later on, like, the next mission, you find out that Jonas, like, sees this girl that he really likes, but she's like helping you with this mission. And so Lara's like, hey, just stay here. I'm going to go do some recon in this town that we're at.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see that, like, she is, like, taking on cues. It's like an actual movie playing out, right? Like, characters actually want different things instead of just having that one character. Cinematics are amazing, like usual. I really love the lighting. They've taken really good care on these cinematics to, like, form the scene out perfectly. So it sets the mood. And they use enough lighting. So it's not very gamey. You know, some cinematics are, like, super gamey, where it's, like, really lit and stuff. Maybe kind of, sort of.
So it's, like, give me an example.
So it looks like a movie, basically.
Right. But, I mean, like, some... Well, so, like, it looks more akin to... I don't know. I'm trying to think of an example that looks gamey. I mean, most of the cutscenes
nowadays are pretty
cinematic. And so, I mean, like, any Nathan Drake cutscene is, like, super cinematic.
Yeah.
Like Last of Us.
That's a good.
It's super cinematic. Yeah. And all that stuff.
I mean, think of a Nathan Drake, but not to that degree. Night Dog does pretty damn good job with their cutscenes.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like basically real, but
yeah.
I mean, I think, like, overall the lighting helps me get into that mood, especially for all the stuff going on. Cause obviously the side of the story, it's kind of dramatic and things like that. So there's this one episode or one mission where we go back in time to Lara's past. And so you're little Lara, and, like, she's, you know, imagining she's an adventurer or whatever, and she, like, gets this treasure, and then she climbs, like, part of her mission that she puts for herself is she has to climb up her 4-story manor to get to the top and, like, drop down into this room that's on the 4th floor to find this relic. And the whole time, she almost dies 2 times.
Shit.
Yeah. I was like, what the hell is this little girl doing? But I think it's nice to go back to see Lara in her young state and how, like, she's kind of always wanted to do this. And then you get to see a little more of her family and dive into that. Cause I mean, more or less, the family issue is a family aspect has always been part of her story, like the driving part of her story. You just know, like, her family died or whatever in the first original ones. And this one, like, you kind of fill out, like, you get a dynamic between her mom and her dad.
Yeah.
So I won't go into that, but I think it's really interesting to kind of fill out the story a little more. Like, they're doing really good things with this one so far. But what I'm worried about is that she's going to stay the same all the way through the rest of the story.
Yeah.
Like, she's going to stay, like, teenage Lara or whatever. Like, 21-year-old Lara.
So, at this point you are in this, you haven't seen her really develop at all over the course of these 3 games?
I haven't.
Really? I'm surprised.
Like, I was expecting what they're saying about this game to have happened last game.
Yeah.
And I think that would have been a better arc, actually.
Yeah.
That she became the Tomb Raider. Because it was Rise of the Tomb Raider.
Right.
She's supposed to rise to her, you know, grandeur of who she is. And then this one is, like, could be her downfall, where she has to rethink a lot of things. Like, now she's gone over the top. You know, she's already the strong woman, but maybe she's, like, a little too dark. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
that's what I thought was happening the whole time. Like, I figured she had developed over the course of the first 2 games in some capacity.
Right.
So, like, what did develop then? Like, what was the story there? If she didn't develop as a character, then, like, what developed? So the story's not good then.
It's good. It's just not what
Your character should. I mean, that's what a story is that you have. I mean, you a good story has a character go through some kind of
change, thing
that they have to overcome,
right,
to reach to the end, and then they get to the climax, and, like, that's when, like, something happens, like a trigger that, you know, initiates whatever, and that's what initiates Act 3, and then it drops into, like, the resolution of the story. But if she never changed in any capacity, then there was no climax and there was none of that. So, like, what story was there?
A video game story.
I know, but I mean, I'm trying to dig deeper.
No, I know, like, I understand.
Because you played it, I haven't, so I have no idea, like, what.
Well, she didn't change
there
in
had
any
to be
significant
something
way.
That happened in that, in some capacity, like whether it be a third party, like, involvement. But I know in this game, like, the villain's different. Like, there's a completely different villain,
right?
So, like, there had to be something that happened with her or her environment from those 3 versions. Otherwise, I mean, everybody says the story's really good, so I'm, like, trying to figure out, what about the story is good if she never changes the character?
Right.
So if she didn't change, then what makes that story good?
I don't remember the first one. The second one, she didn't change the way I thought she would. Not to say that she didn't change. It's been a while since I played that.
So she did change.
I guess. See, it's not. It was not significant enough for me to even remember what changed.
Okay.
Because what. Okay. I just know the whole time they were being like, this is when Lara becomes a woman. I was like, well, that should happen this last game. And it didn't.
Okay.
You know, and for what I remember the whole way through, she was that whiny girl, which really annoyed me the whole game for the last one. And I was just like, when is Lara going to be that strong woman? Where it's like, I have to kill. Like, I don't I don't know. This facade that gets, you know, chopped away, you know, that extra fat, just lop it off. I don't know.
Yeah. So she just like hesitant to kill people, like
she's not hesitant to kill people, but there's a certain demeanor about her that's not that's not there yet. Like this one, like she is a little more like she gets it, like she's like, yeah, I'm gonna fucking kill people,
yeah,
but she's not like so blunt about it.
Yeah,
I don't know, there's something about Lara and the originals.
Is her reasoning changing now? Like maybe before she was just killing people for the sake of survival, and now she's killing people because she's got like a revenge mission, or she's got a mission that she's carrying out that makes her intention for killing people different than it was in the earlier games. So, I know Tomb Raider 1 was all about like this is like a survival.
Yeah.
Like, everything around her was fucked up and she had to, her goal was to survive. Like that was Tomb Raider 1 from my understanding. And then Shadow of the Tomb Raider or Rise of the Tomb Raider. I'm not really sure what that part was. I don't remember what that storyline was supposed to be, but I know that first one was all about survival.
Right.
And like her trying to, I mean, it was a very gritty, dark version of Tomb Raider in that the world was against her and all odds, like both environment and then enemy villains and stuff like that. So I was curious to see if there is something, I don't know, just see where things have developed, like that, like her, like that point she had a reason to be killing because it was about keeping herself alive,
right?
So like where did that go in Rise of the Tomb Raider when she wasn't as much trying to stay alive? I mean, she still is, I guess, but
right. Well, the whole thing with that is like she's trying to stop this organization called Trinity that killed her dad, and so she's trying to figure out that whole mystery and stop them from, you know, getting their whatever the relics or whatever to, you know, control the world. And that's the same with this one.
Yeah. I do remember hearing somebody say something about the dad situation. Like, I don't know if it was that plot point was weak or if it was,
there.
Yeah.
But I feel with this one, like the first few levels, like it fills out some of those, not completely fill it out, but it's a little like more clear and you get some dynamics, which you don't get a lot in the game. That's why I'm like impressed so far, is that like, the dynamics are changing and you see a lot more of it.
Yeah.
Which that doesn't really happen in the game. They're just like, oh, here, go from mission A to mission B and like things happen, right?
Yeah.
Kill some bad guys. You learn that, you know, you thwart the bad guy's plans or something. So what I'm hoping is that Lara becomes this stronger woman, less whiny. And like, there's just fire in her. There is fire in her. I don't know. Maybe it's just the way they have the character shaped. That is just not doing it for me.
Yeah.
Like maybe she has changed and I just can't grasp it.
Yeah.
I don't know. At the end of it, we'll find out.
Okay.
I've only gotten like 3, 4, maybe 5 hours in. So it's not very far. Still got a long way to go.
Well, let's move on to the next component here.
We tore that apart.
Yeah. So I've been playing a game called Bad North, and this is a game by a developer company. This is their first game called their company is called Plausible Concept. They're based out of Sweden. This game is published by Raw Fury. I got this on the Switch, but it's available on all console systems. It's a very affordable game. I believe it was like $10, $15, something like that. But it is a real-time strategy roguelike set in the Viking era. So you play as, you have a commander, and then he's got a squad of troops that he controls. And you, as a player, are going through a set of procedurally generated levels that are very small. They're islands that are isolated in the middle of the water. And your goal is to defend those islands from attackers. So you have little houses and stuff that are on the island that have to be protected. So when the attackers come in, they come in on Viking ships, and then they dock, they get off, and they run to the nearest house and throw firebombs out to try and kill the house. So you got to prevent them from throwing the firebombs and burning all the houses on the island. If that happens, you lose. If your commander dies, you lose. if you lose all of your guys or whatever, you also lose. So as long as the commander stays alive, you get like a new army of troops the next time you play the next level. But if like all of them die in that round, like that team is done. Like you don't have a team. You can have up to four squads and you acquire them as you play through these procedurally generated missions. And each one, there's a lot of intense like tactics to it, but it's very simplified, like very... The thing that I like about this game, it's a very focused, tight-knit gameplay mechanic that they did really, really well. So they built out this idea of you have these squads, you position them on a grid-like island, and then these ships come in from different ways. So there's like a horn that goes off that indicates there's a new attacker coming. And then you have to like zoom out on the map and you can see them coming from the fog in the distance. Like you'll see where they're coming from. So you set up your troops and get them in position so that when the Vikings do land, you fight them off. And some of the Vikings could be archers, so they'll be able to shoot you before they get on land, or they'll have a pike, so when they get off, they like can like attack you really hard and like have a full force. Or if they're coming in on a big ass ship, they'll like dive the ship into the land and basically like push your whole entire team back so they can like break away past you and get up to their objective, which is burning the houses down. And then you as a player can play with pikemen, which are, they hold their ground. They can't attack when they're moving, but when they hold their ground, they like defensive positions and just like pike everybody as they land. So they're good for like holding the front lines. And then you have swordsmen that eventually have shields that hold up shields. So whenever like arrows are lobbing down, you want them in the front because they'll be blocking the arrows as they come in from the water. And then you have archers. So you can stick the archers up on like a perched hill and have them like lob stuff down to like thin out the numbers as the ships are approaching the nice. Island. And so those are the three main characters. And then each one of those commanders you can upgrade. So as you protect your homes, you get coins for each home that's saved in that island, and then it reveals more of the map and you have different types of islands you can pick. And certain islands will give you like a special bonus. Some islands will give you a new commander that you can recruit to your team. And then as you get these houses, you level up your characters and you can upgrade them so they're stronger. You can add special abilities. So like one will be like a attack that you send out that the archer just lobs a bunch of arrows and just like has a rain of arrows that comes down. Or like the pikemen will have like a big huge charge attack, so when they come in on the land, like you can just press the button and all of them will just like lunge at the enemy and like kill all the whole entire squad that just came on. And yeah, that's Bad North. It's pretty, it's pretty exciting.
Do you like it?
I do like it. I like it a lot.
Cycle or the
yeah, it's hard. It's really hard. Like starting out, because it's roguelike. So like once you die and lose all your guys, like you're done. You have to start back from the beginning. And so like the last round that I ran, I went through, I want to say 25 or 30 islands. So I got almost to where I think I was complete, because I think there's an end game. Like, but they're procedurally generated, so they're always gonna be different islands. But when I got towards the end, it was just so hard. There were so many waves of people coming that I was just like, I'm outnumbered. And then I lost a squad and I was fucked.
Can you do multiplayer on? Oh, it's just one player.
It's just one player.
This would be cool to have two people on a Switch playing.
It would be. Yeah, I think that'd be fun. It would actually be really cool if you could like have two islands.
Oh, and it's like attack each other.
Back and forth. Yeah.
Dude, that would be sweet. Then you have two Switches. So yeah. Two on one and two on the other.
Exactly.
Or four.
Yeah.
Technically.
Yeah. It's really, really clever idea. Really cool concept.
I remember when this was coming out, or when they did it on the show on the Nintendo Direct. It was one of those games I was like, this actually looks fun. Mm-hmm. This is very similar to that tank game I was telling you about.
Yep.
Except imagine not water, but all land and stuff.
Yeah.
And cool. So you dig it?
Yeah, definitely dig. I really enjoyed it. I'm going to keep playing it. It's just something that, you know, there's no story to it, really. It's just like progression, eventually you die and go out. So it's like something you can pick up and play. One match is like 5 minutes. So, you know, if that, and you just keep playing through levels until you die and then you start over.
They do something really cool with this.
Yeah.
I mean, I like that there's games you can just kind of pick up and play and then be done with it. But have something a little deeper that keeps you invested.
Yeah.
Because this is just like, what do you call it? Kingdom
Deathlands.
Kingdom New Lands.
Or New Lands, yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's easy to pick up and play, but there's a little more things invested in that. I want to keep you keep, like, I fucking play it for like a week straight almost. And it's just like, I want to keep coming back to it.
Yeah.
This, I feel like I'd play for a little bit and then put it down and I'd play it again.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's sad because it looks cool.
Yeah. No, the art style is really nice. I really like that a lot. So fun game. Definitely a dig. Check it out if you have. It's on Steam. I think at Steam it's $9.99. So not expensive. You can pick it up and
it's play always
it.
More on the Switch.
Dang. I know, right? So next thing we want to talk about, Call of Duty 4 Blackout, or Call of Duty Black Ops 4 Blackout Battle Royale is an open beta. It's available to play. We have both played it and gone through it and want to give our first impressions of it. Man. So, yeah, man, freaking Blackout. So our opinions differ on this, as I think we've discovered. I think I like it more than you do, but I'm going to let you kind of take over and give your initial thoughts, and then I'll jump in.
So as soon as I jumped in, it was already more polished than PUBG. So I actually played PUBG like 2 days before this. I actually got to play Blackout. So it was nice to have that immediate comparison.
Fresh in your mind. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like already running around, the gunplay, switching guns, picking up things, super smooth, super fluid. Kind of plays like PUBG in a way. It's kind of hard to like, I've been trying to figure out words to actually define that, but it feels like PUBG in a way. And I think it's nice that
I think it's the battle royale aspect of this game is all PUBG.
True.
But the gameplay and gunplay,
looking at the map,
pretty much,
and then
Call of Duty.
Yes. Yes. Very much so.
I think that would be the best way to describe it. Because the way the map's designed, the way you drop in, the flow of the combat, that's all very PUBG. But then like when you're in a firefight, like it's Call of Duty. It's,
yes.
But the bullets don't do as much damage as Call of Duty, which is a nice addition and change. But anyway.
So I think this game is going to be way much easier to pick up and play than trying to convince someone to do PUBG at this point. Because it's easy to just jump in the match. Like the match is ready to go in like 30 seconds, basically. Like you jump in, the lobby's full, and it's just like 30 seconds go. I don't know. Has it been shorter for you than that? Like 15 seconds or something?
Well, I mean, it's always a 30-second deployment timer regardless.
Okay, I got you.
So once they fill up the team with... So the count was supposed to be 80 players in this Blackout map, but then for this beta, they've increased it to 88. I don't know if that's going to be a permanent count or if that's just a stress test. But once it fills up to 88, it's a 30-second timer regardless.
I got you.
And but I've waited as much as like a minute and a half for like the count to fill up.
Oh, I got you.
And then once it fills up, that's when the counter starts and drops down to deployment.
Cool.
So
graphics are better. Oh, well, I say that. Graphics are a little more stylized. It's Call of Duty.
It's just weird because like Call of Duty has been around for so long and it's like the graphics are never great in Call of Duty. Like they used to be like top notch. But now I look at a Call of Duty game and I feel like their graphics are like a year and a half old. Now, granted, PUBG doesn't look great either because it's just not well optimized. But for a company that can optimize graphics really well, and I think they do downgrade textures and things like that to be able to achieve a high frame rate. So I understand that. I mean, that's fair. But it's just always weird that I'm never like, I don't play Call of Duty for the badass graphics. It's never
a
badass graphics game. It's just the,
and it works for
it's
this
the gameplay. Yeah.
It works for this. I noticed when I first started running around, getting controls down were a little wonky. They've changed things up, like how meds are used, how your backpack's used. Like I picked up a crap ton of stuff before I needed a backpack. I didn't even know I didn't have a backpack until like way early on, later on when you find a backpack.
Yeah, I mean, I like the fact that like you have the backpack situated in that you have your ammo that is separate. It doesn't count as a space in your backpack. It doesn't count towards weight in the backpack. You can just pick up ammo. And then your med kits is the exact same way. So that doesn't count for a backpack component. The only thing that counts for your backpack is your perks and your attachments that you pick up. But if the attachments are attached to a gun, then that also doesn't take up backpack space. So you have like basically five slots for your backpack. But once you start attaching that stuff to all the other mechanics of the game, like you don't have any space. And when you get a backpack, it adds five more slots. So you basically just have 10 slots. But the weight isn't a consideration or anything like that as it is in PUBG.
Right.
Which I think is nice. It's much more accessible.
Right.
Yeah.
I like how you pick up attachments, but chances of you like having to store down your backpack are super slim.
The chance of you what?
Storing attachments in your backpack.
Are super slow?
No, slim, like storing slim. Those.
Yeah. You don't want to because, that's not.
Well, as soon as you pick up a gun, everything attaches to all the guns.
Exactly.
Basically.
Yeah. So, like, you get used to it pretty quickly that, like, you go up to an attachment, you're like, oh, there's a, a new sight or there's a grip or whatever it is. You just like have mentally in your head, okay, I need this, this, and this for my guns. So based on what gun you have equipped at that active moment, when you press F, it auto equips that to that gun. So you don't have to be like going in your inventory every time, like dragging it over or whatever. That's another thing too. You don't have to drag anything. You just go up to, you click on it, and like attaches it automatically right. to whatever it needs to attach to.
I kept dropping stuff because I thought I was supposed to right click or whatever. And just like, I was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
But yeah, the auto stuff, the auto attachments are really nice. And like, it seems like, well, I don't know what they're going to change from this to the actual release, but there's not too many guns out there. And most of the attachments go to about every gun. So it's easy to like, it's nice not needing like a level 3 backpack in PUBG to get all the stuff to like, hopefully you find a good gun that you want to attach all the stuff to. It's just like having a limited amount, I think makes for a better, I want to say easier tactically, but
there's less management of inventory and more focus on just playing the game.
Right. Yeah. Which is very Call of Duty.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I like that. I do definitely. Like that.
Yeah. But it's not as like friendly as say Fortnite. You know, it's been a nice medium point. Like it's more hardcore leaning towards PUBG, but it's got some of the benefits of Fortnite that make it more accessible in this game, but it's like right in the middle a little bit, but I think it's more leaning towards PUBG than it is Fortnite.
Right.
Because like the gunplay. So one thing that I thought was really interesting is that, typically in like Call of Duty, like you aim at a wall and you point at a spot and you hold down that gun. Like you're not going to have any like bullet, like you're not going to have your recoil like go up at all. So you're not going to like shoot up a wall if you just hold the gun down and leave your cursor pointed at it. And this one, like there is a little bit of recoil that does have an effect on your shot. You do have to like track, like lead a shot a little bit if they're off in the distance, especially if you don't have the right bullet type. So they do take some of that stuff into consideration, especially with snipers as well. So like snipers, you have to lead a character as they're running as well as with the height in addition to that. And I was watching their documentary, their stream that they were talking about this, and they really put that time into it because they wanted it to have that. They didn't want to be, they wanted to change it up from Call of Duty. So that was kind of their intention for that. And I do like that addition because it is harder to kill people in this. It's harder to kill people than it is in Call of Duty. And I was worried about that when getting into this because I thought it was going to be in Call of Duty, it's like four shots and you kill somebody. And here, like it's a whole clip sometimes before you kill somebody. And you can't like just hold down auto fire to like shoot at somebody. You have to kind of go and burst and stuff like that because a recoil will affect whether you're hitting them or not. So that was kind of nice, but, let's talk about the map for a second. So the map is like a culmination of all kinds of blackout multiplayer maps and experiences. So they have like the Asylum, which has zombies in it. And then they have, Estate, which is one of the Call of Duty maps. It's got a really modern look to it. It's got Nuketown Island, which is taken from like Nuketown is like one of the popular maps. Well, they have an island now that when you enter the island, it's got like a number counter that tells you how many people are there, which is pretty cool. They have the cargo docks from one of the games. Like there's all kinds of like just hints at previous Blackouts games all culminating in one. And I thought it would feel like a copy and paste of things into this world.
That's what I thought.
With nothing in between it. But they actually did do a good job of designing the world around it in between these choke points. Like there's a lot of hills, there's a lot of trees, a lot of foliage and stuff throughout where it all feels like it's part of one big world.
Right.
But then there is diversity in it in that you have hilly like regions that are like kind of more mountainous. You have the coastal regions that are a lot more flat. And then you have like a whole desert region that is really, really nice and complicated and tricky to navigate because everything looks the same. But then you have rocks everywhere and like there could be a guy like peeking out over the distance. And you're like, who the fuck is that?
Yeah.
And then they shoot you and snipe you in the head. Yeah. And you're like, done. So
the gunplay was the weirdest to get around because, I mean, I guess once you put all these attachments on, the recoil and the gun drift is like, not, it's just negligible. It's not even existent. Because like I had a nice, I had some 5.56 gun and I had a 4x on it with a backstock and like a front handle.
Oh yeah.
And it was just like, I was just like, I was hitting people left and right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like easy, like really taking down their armor. And I was
the rifle too, like that has a longer range shot too. It's the longest range shot, I think, in the game, the 5.56 is.
Oh, okay.
So any of those rifles you pick up that 5.56, it's like almost like a sniper shot. And then on the back stock, that reduces the recoil. So you're definitely going to have a pretty good clean shot on that one.
Yeah. So my loadout was mostly like some kind of 5.56 gun and the shotgun, the automatic shotgun, which is nice. And so, but man, it's really weird. Well, it's just a beta, and I'm sure they haven't really perfected it all the way, but like hitting these people, because, you know, in PUBG, there's no like, you know, you hit somebody, right? But with this one, when you hit them, like there's an armor little icon that pops up in, on your reticle.
Yeah.
And that was super distracting because I'm so used to PUBG or it's even Fortnite, and you can just see it, right? But that thing popping up is like telling me something. I don't know why. I just like threw my brain through a loop, and I was like, I wouldn't miss, but like they would move, and I'm like, oh shit, like this thing's in my way for a second. And this is like, wait, am I doing damage to them? Because I didn't know what that meant at first. I just knew there's armor on there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just an indicator saying that, hey, they have armor.
Yeah.
And then it takes longer to kill them.
It has that like noise that and like makes you know you're hitting armor. But
yeah.
And then level 3 armor apparently is just ridiculous.
Oh my gosh, it's awful. Yeah, a whole clip and a half, and they're not down yet.
In the head.
Yeah, it's really bad. But real quick, some of the other things in there, like they have perks in there now. So like perks that are pulled over from like multiplayer. So you can get a perk, like for example, called Paranoia, that allows you to increase the sounds of footsteps and stuff around you. So you have a better idea of what direction people are coming from. They have some that make your gun more stable at long range. And then when you're swimming, you have a longer breath that you can hold. So you can hold your breath longer, basically, for like stabilization when you're shooting with the sniper rifles,
right?
And also with swimming, they have a lurker, or like they have different perks to tell you where like stashes are. They have one called
Dead Silent,
yeah,
which I really liked. Which basically you could run and no one would hear you.
Yeah.
And then they have one where I never saw what the medic one was.
I didn't use that one. I had one where like if you're crouch or prone, you go to the speed of running. Like you move really fast when you're crouched and
prone. That's cool.
Yeah. And then they have little gadgets and stuff. Like they have a grappling hook, and I had never played with it, but I saw Josh. I was watching him play with it, and like literally it's unlimited use. So he was in a firefight. So he was like, I was like, dude, you're basically Spider-Man right now. So he reaches out a tree and he like grapples, and it like pulls him to the tree. And then he looks at a building and he like grapples to it, and it pulls him up to the building. And he's like, just like jumping around the map all over the place. And it's just like all you can use as much as you want.
Wow.
It's like shit. Crazy. And the little car, like you can send that in there to like
you know
inspect an area to see what's going on before you like attack in there,
right?
And know like what you're up against. And
so those things are really gonna, like, I really enjoy that.
Yeah,
like those are really nice. It's a great refresh to the genre already, and I think that's gonna help solidify this game as a battle royale, like one that's gonna stick around.
Yeah,
I easily see this taking over PUBG easily, not Fortnite, but PUBG. And it might require, or might force Fortnite to think of some stuff, because there's a few games now coming out that have people have powers or some kind of ability that you can get in the battle royale game. So I'm iffy on that. I don't think Epic will go as far as that to do that anytime soon, but I think it's gonna be here to stay.
Yeah, I think it's pretty solid. I think I was worried about when Call of Duty said they were going to do that, but I think it was a good decision because they need someone to keep themselves relevant.
Right.
And I mean, it sucks they don't have single player anymore, but Zombies is going to have a pretty strong single player component to it. But I do think that I think they'd be really smart to make this standalone and bring it out as its own thing. They sell for a discounted price.
Yes.
Because I know a lot of people that are going to buy that $60 game exclusively for Blackout.
Right.
But there's going to be a lot of people that just want it for Blackout and aren't going to shell out $60 because they just want it for Blackout. So,
I mean, they do something where it's like half the price of the game.
Yeah.
But like give extra add-on stuff.
Yeah.
Like standalone, plus you get some cool skins or whatever. You know, apparently you could just switch out your characters and I guess modify the way they look.
Yeah, you'll be able to do that on full game, which would be nice.
Dude, if you do $30, I think people would buy that for $30 plus add-ons.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. There was a lot of bugs. Don't really want to talk about that stuff a whole lot, but there was a car. Like, if you're driving a truck, the vehicle is actually like drove really well until you stop them and they just like start rolling by themselves down the hill and then
killing
kill your
all your friends. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. So that was awesome. I never flew a helicopter, but I was like, I was glad to see that people were afraid to get in the helicopter because it became a target.
So oh,
like,
dude! Nobody
wanted to jump into it because it was like we're gonna be a target.
I almost smoked a whole team in a helicopter.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah, I was just like from afar because that's the first time like I shot something. I wasn't like so super far, but I was just like G-g-g-g-g-g, and they were like taking hits like crazy.
Yeah,
I was like okay.
And the first time you were shooting at the helicopter,
I was shooting at the helicopter.
Okay,
yeah.
So I was like
this
yeah.
is stupid. You should not be in the helicopter.
No. Yeah, because you hear it really loud, and then it lands somewhere. You just follow it, and you're like, oh, there's some bad guys. Go chase them down.
Right, yeah.
Take them out. We know where they are. They don't know where we are, so.
Anyway.
All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for the games we played this week. Thank you all for sticking with us for Shadow of the Tomb Raider, Bad North, and Call of Duty Blackout. Take a quick break and come back with our video game news.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
It is time for a video game news. In this segment, we share the best headlines from the week in the gaming industry. First, we have Nintendo had another Nintendo Direct this week. They announced a lot of new things, but there's a few things in particular that we want to talk about. First, we have a new Luigi's Mansion game is in development for the Switch. I've never played New Luigi's Mansion, but Austin, have you played it?
Nope.
All right, cool.
That was way past my time.
Definitely. 3DS is still getting some new games, including Kirby's Extra Epic Yarn, Bowser's Inside Story, and in addition to the Switch, we're going to get a Super Mario Brothers U Deluxe coming to the Switch. This is a side-scrolling version of Super Mario Brothers, as we all know, and it is coming, Deluxe version, to the Switch, and that looks, I'm excited about that. It's a fun little game.
Can I see something?
No.
Kamari Damase. Is this like a big Nintendo game that I had never heard about?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It's a thing that's been around that's really awesome and really well loved and respected. And I didn't know about it until I showed Devin Donut County and he was like, oh, it's like Katamari Damacy. And I was like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
we looked
I only
it up
heard about it.
And
this last week when everyone brought it up.
Yeah. So Katamari Damacy is apparently a game in which you just pick up objects and roll around the area and get a bigger and bigger ball as you consume things. There's other parts to it too, but you get big and big and big and it's just like control, like consume everything. It's just a very cool physics fun game, and I think it's gonna be enjoyable because I really really enjoy Donut County, and it's similar concept except rather than consuming everything in your hole to get the hole bigger, you are picking things up as you roll around the town. Nintendo shared more about their new Switch service. So it's going to support online play. As we know, it comes out literally in 2 days. So when you listen to this podcast, the Switch online service will be live. Classic NES games will be available with online support. There's going to be roughly 20 of them when it comes out. You're going to have cloud saves for most of your games. And it'll be $3.99 for a month, $7.99 for 3 months, and $19.99 for 12 months. On the note of the NES, you are also going to get NES-style Joy-Con controllers that will work with all classic Nintendo games and look like the NES. And they also dock on the side of your Switch console, which is kind of cool.
That's funny. It looks funny.
It does look really funny. Game Freak, the makers of Pokemon, is making a new RPG for the Switch called Town. We don't know much about it, but you'll be protecting a town from monsters, and it comes out next year in 2019. City Skylines is coming to the Switch, and then also Civilization 6 is coming to the Switch, and World of Final Fantasy is coming to the Switch. I don't know what this is, but it's a thing.
Well, it's not the only one.
Oh, and then Final Fantasy 10, 12, the Zodiac 12. Age is coming to the Switch. And then Final Fantasies 5, 6, 7, 9, 10, and X2 remasters are all coming out next year on the Switch.
Jeez, how many remasters? There's a lot of X's in these.
There's just so many. Yeah, it's kind of like the freaking iPhone. And then Animal Crossing's Isabelle is coming to Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, so that's a new character announced. And last but not least, Animal Crossing is coming in 2019 to the Switch.
Which is what everyone has been waiting for.
Yes.
Like I know nothing of Animal Crossing. I keep hearing Animal Crossing and it's awesome, but I never got into it. And I feel like that's for a different generation than our generation. because it just doesn't seem appealing to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's cutesy and stuff like that. I mean, I feel like it's for younger people.
Yeah.
And then we, like, if you were growing up during that genre or that time, like, you would have nostalgia for it.
Right. I was already on the Xbox and, yeah, you know,
you're playing shooters. Halo, shooting aliens and stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, you terrible, terrible human being.
I will say this, Brett.
Yes.
I enjoy these directs. And wasn't there one, like, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Like, or a week ago?
They've had pretty much one every month, I think.
This is ridiculous. Yeah. I really enjoy this. I thought directs were just a freaking E3 thing, you know, just like everyone else does. Like this, you know, they're just tiling something really interesting. But yeah, it's nice to see this consistent, and I hope this is still consistent throughout next year.
Yeah.
And I like how they do the nindies every month or two.
Yeah. Give you a little update on the indie games coming out. And it's quick. It's like a 20, 30 minute TV show and you're just like done.
Hype's real too, you know? The hype is real.
Yes. Yeah. Next story we have is a new console that's in development right now for $250. It is a game console called the Polymega. And this is a console that allows you to basically play classic games in your living room in a modern day game console. So it has support for up to 30 systems, 9,000 plus playable games, and it's been in the making for 30 years because these games have been around for 30 years. But it has support for the PlayStation, the Sega Saturn, the Sega Genesis, the Sega Genesis 32X, the Sega CD, the TurboGrafx, the PC Engine, the PC Engine CD-ROM, the Super Graphics, the Neo Geo, the NES, and the Super NES, and the Super Famicom. So that's a lot of shit that it has support for. And if it's a CD, you just plug it into the system and you run the CDs and that works as it is. And you can load these games, I believe, onto the system itself. And you can download them digitally in 2019. Top quality titles start at $3.99 and CD games are $5.99. And then in addition to the CD-ROM games, you can buy modules that will attach to the top of the system and allow you to play the NES cartridges that literally stick on top of it and plug in. So you can play old school NES, and these modules will support all of those things. And they even make different controllers that are shaped to be designed like the old school consoles. You can have like a Super NES style console. You can have a Sega style controller. You have a controller that's designed like the NES itself. All this new UI, and it's got a lot of promise. Will it be good? I don't know. It comes out in 2019, but it looks like the perfect console system for classic games if you own classic games.
Right. And that market is surprisingly big, I guess. Yeah. Like for these things to continue coming out, especially with all the Nintendo, you know, retro consoles,
yeah,
being released. And
I mean, they kind of proved it themselves. Like when they brought out like the NES and it like sold off the store shelves, you're like, okay, well, we're gonna do some other things. It's the fact that they like made this thing work, and like it made a modular system that can support all these different types of systems in one box that looks good. It's pretty impressive.
That's good.
Kind of really good. I don't know how it's going to compete with the Atari box.
Yeah.
Like, the Atari box kind of struggling a little bit.
Right, right.
The sense
it's such a niche thing, but I mean, with something like this, this is only helping all those consoles out. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Like Nintendo paved the way. Atari is just trying to, you know, ride the coattails of Nintendo. This one's coming out. I mean, there's a market now, like a legitimate market.
Yeah.
So it's possible that all these things could take off, but I mean, who wants what? I don't know.
Yep. That is correct. Next story we have, there's been a lot of stuff with streamers and like safety concerns lately. And most recently, Dr. Disrespect, popular streamer that plays PUBG, he does some Fortnite, he does some other stuff, known to be kind of crazy and wild on his streams. used to have a Slick Daddy's Club. Then it's changed because of his infidelity and all that stuff. Anyway, he was fired at his house where somebody shot what is thought to be a BB gun, shattering a window. This was the second time that happened that week. And it's kind of brought to light the fact that this has been happening more recently, especially with streamers. And it kind of raised a lot of security concerns for people that are streaming their lives and in regards to, you know, putting out their real name and revealing like where they're located at and like giving all this information to people, because it's scary out there. There's some people that are they get super intense and super dedicated, or they just don't like how a person portrays themselves, or they don't like what somebody says. And there's some people that can get pretty trolly on the internet. And then when they bring it into real life, then that's even, that's a scary, scary situation.
So. Yeah, this is, it's really unfortunate. I mean, this sucks. I think this goes along with, you know, the community you create. Obviously, it's just kind of like the community that's created is kind of about just who sees you and who, you know, latches on. Now, it happened with Meg Turney the other day, or not the other day, but last year, or maybe it was early this year. I can't remember. When she had some people, when she had some guy come from another state and wanted to kill Gavin, her boyfriend, or I guess fiance. Are they getting married? I can't remember. Anyway,
fiance,
because he didn't like her, or he didn't like him, and he loved her. Apparently, this shooter. It's just kind of, it just goes to show that, you know, there are positives and negatives to everything, obviously, and it's people. You never know who you're getting, and it's like, how do you create a community where there's going to be positivity in there, and then you can kind of weed out some of these people that do this. Obviously, it's going to be impossible to weed out all these people.
Yeah,
this is going to happen. Yeah. This is just going to happen. I feel like it's sad to say it's kind of common,
but to keep it away.
Yeah, crazy people latch on to people in the limelight. I mean, this happened. I'm sure this happens to like celebrity Hollywood stars all the time.
Yeah.
Maybe not getting shot at, but you know, crazy people who fall in love with you or whatever. And
well, the thing about celebrity stars is that they can actually, even though they've always been under scrutiny for like, oh, they're always in the limelight and stuff like that, they can turn off their exposure to the public.
That's true.
But as a streamer, they stream every day. They need to stream every day to stay relevant and like have people keep like following them. Cause what the days that they're not streaming, somebody else is streaming to take away their viewership.
Right.
So it's like, there's this mentality that you need to stream all the time. When you're doing that, you can't get away from the public eye.
Right.
And, so in a way that they're in a worse situation than the celebrities are, which is crazy to think about, cause they don't make near as much money as celebrities do. But I mean, they are celebrities, but they don't produce the amount of money that like, you know, famous actors and stuff get. But, you know, there's streamers out there that are afraid now to go to TwitchCon and DreamHack Atlanta and stuff like that, because they're worried, like, what if these people are there?
Right.
Like, they don't want to put themselves in danger.
I mean, and they put other people in danger too. But I mean, the good thing is that TwitchCon and other cons like that are looking to beef up security. Right. And that's the thing with like all these conventions now. It's crazy to think that. Cause I remember like for a long time, I was thinking that, cosplay cons, like dominantly cosplay cons, pretty safe. You know, I mean, you have weird people there, but then there was, it was a tournament. It was like a Pokemon tournament or something like that. And some guy came in and was going to shoot up these people because he didn't like them. And he brought like a bunch of weapons in his vehicle, and luckily he got stopped before anything happened. They were having a Pokemon tournament at a cosplay convention.
Yeah.
And like, that was the first time I noticed something like that in this community, when I was like, oh, everyone's very welcoming. Everyone's very cool. We all like the same things. Like, you know, there's not a lot of controversy going on here. And to see this kind of leak into this is a little disheartening, but I mean, once you get a multitude of people together, man, you get drama everywhere. Because like, I don't know if people see it, but in cosplay community, there's a lot of drama on like on one side of, I don't know, bad term, but one side of the aisle, if you're not looking at that, like you don't notice it.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it sucks. It really does suck.
Yeah.
Cause you want people to come together. There's this community, like there's a great thing happening here, and now it's kind of thwarted by these stupid people, but
it doesn't make it. Yeah. It makes it difficult in a way, but, hopefully I think the biggest thing is just like formulating that community that is,
right.
You have a culture that you're building, like in any business, like when you start a business, like you want to build a culture early on so that that culture kind of, you know, carries through as you expand and grow and everything like that. Same with like building a community. You want to maintain that strong culture of people being respectful of one another and everything like that. You don't want to grow a culture of toxicity, because it's just going to get even more toxic as it expands and gets bigger. So, yeah. So enough about that. Let's talk about Bethesda. Pete Hines came out and confirmed that there is going to absolutely be a Wolfenstein 3. he was in an interview with Game Central and said that, yeah, they're making Wolfenstein 3. And like, why would they not? And they're taking a break from the large story to focus on doing Wolfenstein Youngblood, obviously. But once they finish up with that, they're going to be doing something with the next iteration of Wolfenstein. And then he also answered a question in regards to people, rumors going around saying that the Arkane's company, Arkane Studios, was going to maybe shelve Dishonored. And he said, quote, "I wouldn't read too much into that." So hopefully that doesn't mean that they're going away. Because like, I've never gone really into Dishonored, but I know that it's got a strong following.
Yeah, it's got a cult following, I would say.
And they also mentioned, like, you know, the fact that there's so many freaking games out there. Like, they're the one of few developers that is exclusively putting out single player games,
right?
That, you know, they really Which put a heavy emphasis
awesome.
On that.
Awesome.
Yeah, and he's like, well, that's not going away. Like, that's right. who we are. So we're gonna keep doing that. So I'm glad that they're not giving in. I mean, they are doing a little bit with Fallout 76, so we'll see. Hopefully that doesn't make it to where they see success with that to the level that they stop making these single player games. I mean, I want them to be successful, but I don't want them to see like, oh shit, now we just got to do all this, because that's just
right.
We've seen so much more money from this than we have any of our other single player games. I hope that doesn't happen.
I think single player game is the pillar they stand on.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think they'll ever forget that Skyrim made them like all the money. You know what I mean? Like, games like that is like what's going to carry them through. So good job, fans. Good job. And good on Bethesda for making such a good game as that. But man, I'm really hoping they do shelve Dishonored. It's not my favorite game. It's pretty good. Like, I enjoyed the last one.
Yeah.
Like, it was fun, but it wasn't like, it's not a game that I'm like, I get super hyped about. Now, I'm sure people who are like this game probably don't want me saying it, but I feel like they should shelve it for a little bit and then come back to it later and maybe revive it.
Yeah,
put a new twist on it. I think that'd be cool, because last one was good, but I don't know where they go from there. Then again, I'm not like super into like, oh, what's next for Dishonored, you know? So
yeah, it's for a certain, like, it's a very specific type of game, and you know, it's got some stealth to it, but it's not necessarily stealthy, and the art style is very specific, and
yeah,
there are certain things about it that I haven't really gotten into yet, but I want to try it again. I want to like give it another time.
It might be worth going
back.
See
what I think.
Very steampunky. Anyway.
Yeah. So Assassin's Creed Odyssey has DLC announced. So, you know, we talked about a couple weeks ago, I believe, that Assassin's Creed was not going to be coming out in 2019, which I'm glad that they're taking a break, but that doesn't mean we're not going to see Assassin's Creed in 2019. Instead, we're going to see a lot of DLC centered around the Assassin's Creed Odyssey universe. So with the Assassin's Creed game, you're going to be able to get DLC content as part of their season pass. It's going to include two episodic story arcs. Legacy of the First Blade will introduce players to the first hero to wield the iconic Hidden Blade, changing the course of history. And this comes out December of 2018.
Nice.
And then The Fate of Atlantis will have players, quote, confront godly creatures and uncover the secrets of the legendary sunken city of Atlantis, beginning in spring of 2019. So that's pretty interesting. Those are two very different types of story approaches. But that's not all. In March of 2019, which is a couple months, They said spring of 2019 for the second DLC, so I don't know if this is going to come out before or after, but they are making a remastered version of Assassin's Creed 3, which I was very, very shocked to see this. But this will come out in March of 2019 and can be purchased outside of the season pass. But if you get the season pass, you get the two DLCs for Odyssey plus Assassin's Creed 3 remastered plus all the DLC for that game. So that's pretty good. But not only that, to top it off, in addition to that, you're also going to get Assassin's Creed Liberation remastered, which was a game on the PS Vita. So you're going to get two full games re-released, remastered 4K HDR, plus two DLC packs for the cost of the season pass. So
there are too many games coming out.
It's a lot of stuff.
They don't need to be re-releasing games right now.
Right?
Many games right now.
It is.
It's cool.
A lot.
It's a good little deal. It's a good deal. Okay, I will say this. Recently, I was telling Brett, you know, I pre-ordered Rise of the Tomb Raider or Shadow of the Tomb Raider just so I could play it early. And I was like, you know what? It's not a bad price. If you know you're going to buy it, you might as well just pre-order it and play it early. And say with the blackout, like if you wanted to get it early, you could just pre-order it if you know you're going to play it regardless. And like they're doing stuff like this where like you're getting cool add-on things. Like these are worth pre-ordering, I feel like. Now, I know a lot of people are solely against pre-ordering whatsoever. And like I get that. I totally get that. But if you're offering something decent that people want.
Well, this doesn't come with a pre-order.
Oh, that's not the pre-order?
This is just if you buy the game with season pass, you get all this stuff.
Man.
Yeah.
They should have that as a pre-order. People would buy it. I guarantee you.
I don't know. I mean, they do have other things for the pre-order. So if you do pre-order the game, you will get, if you buy the gold or ultimate editions early, you get to play everything 3 days early. So you get early access and everything like that. But this is just part of the season pass. You buy the season pass, and that's what you're gonna get. So that's it's pretty neat that they're gonna do that. So that will give them time to work on the next iteration of Assassin's Creed without having to put too much energy into it.
Yeah.
So good on Ubisoft's been making some interesting moves lately. They're bringing out a shit ton of like packs of things, but like. You know, as much as we want to hate on them, like Far Cry 5 wasn't great or anything like that, but it wasn't bad either.
Right.
But like they put a shit ton of content in their games that isn't detrimental, and their games are doing really, really well. I mean, like For Honor is still being played heavily. Rainbow Six Siege is killing it. I don't know how Wildlands is doing, but that was popular for a while. Division still has an audience, even though it wasn't like huge.
Right.
So putting out terrible stuff.
Their community and the way they grow their community ecosystem are pretty good. I mean, they definitely have a core fan base that sticks around. Something like crazy, like, you know, I don't know what's comparable to Ubisoft really, but they're doing some good stuff regardless. I know we rag on them a lot, at least prior to the whole padding out the Assassin's Creed stuff every 2 years now, when it was just every year. I mean, they were kind of like edging up on EA in a way, but I think they kind of backed off of that a little bit. They're making smart decisions. They see it. The writing's on the wall.
The writing is on the wall. I agree. Next story. I'm pretty hyped about this. Alan Wake.
Is this one of your favorite games?
Like, okay. No, me and Travis are on the same page with this game.
Cool.
Yes, I adored Alan Wake and wanted them to make a second version so bad. So those of you that don't know what Alan Wake is, it was a game made by Remedy Entertainment, the ones that made Max Payne, the original. And then they went on after Alan Wake to create games such as Quantum Break, and they're working on a new game now called Control. And Alan Wake, they were going to do an Alan Wake 2. They never made it. But I wanted them so bad to do it because Alan Wake had a vibe of like Twilight Zone, see, like Hitchcock kind of stuff with Secret Window, things like that. Really cool vibe. Gameplay wasn't like incredible, but the story was so engrossing and exciting that I stuck through it. And there was good gameplay mechanics. It just got, after a while, it got repetitive in certain situations, but they did a great job with creating mechanics that were unique and different, how you shine the light at the bad guys, like kill them and stuff like that. That was really cool. So they're making it in a television show. So it's going to be a live action series based on the adventure. And it's going to be ran with Peter Calloway, who is known for his work on Cloak and Dagger and the show Legion. He's also going to be writing the series. And they're working very heavily with the game's creator, Sam Lake, who will be the executive producer on said show. So... they did come out and say that, you know, early on, like Alan Wake definitely was a game that was basically written as a TV show because they served in episodes and things like that. And when you played the game, and they always ended with a cliffhanger at the end of each episode that went through the process as you went through the game. So it was built around the idea of a TV show. And so it's only natural that they like push it into a TV show.
Right, exactly.
As much as I want to have another game
it okay might be this. A better TV show. Well, I say that. I think this TV show could be comparable to the game.
Yeah.
And be able to add a lot of other things into it that you can put into a game, obviously. Yeah.
I didn't realize this game came out in 2010. Can you believe that?
It came out longer ago.
It does kind of seem that way. Yeah, because they brought out that American Nightmare in 2012, and that didn't do as well. I played it. I thought it was pretty good, but people didn't receive that one as well as other systems. So,
didn't they do like a miniseries? They did a miniseries like leading up to Alan Wake or like after Alan Wake. I think it was on iTunes. It was like little small, like 5 minute short things or something like that. Like three of them, I think. That's pretty good.
Definitely. Next up, Hidetaka Miyazaki. Is one of the two. Anyway, Dark Souls. He is the mastermind behind Dark Souls. They are releasing a VR game called Darasine or Darasine. I want to say it's Darasine. It's a VR game that they're working on. It's coming out officially November 6th. They finally have a date for it. And there's not much to say about this other than that and the fact that the game is a very mysterious game in which you are a time-stopping fairy and you have to solve puzzles and hallways and classrooms of a Victorian-like boarding school. And it's a very big departure from what they're used to doing, but I like that they're a group like the Dark Souls creators are exploring this VR space because if they're doing this, they see it as a viable future for they want to test out the waters with it.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that they're migrating into that, that's a good sign for VR. And not only that, I feel like they can make a very cool atmospheric game in the VR world. I don't like Dark Souls games because they're freaking hard, but I love the atmosphere. Like their world building is really solid. They do a good job with that. So November 6th, Darasine. Are you going to pick it up?
Probably not.
Yeah. Well, you have to get a PS4.
Yeah, also. Definitely not.
Or PS headset.
PSVR.
Last story we have. We haven't talked about this game, actually, because of the fact that we don't play Destiny 2 anymore. But Destiny 2 Forsaken is out, for those of you that don't know. And
people like it.
People like it. Yeah. Have you? What have you been reading about it?
Absolutely nothing. I don't care about it.
Well, that's lovely.
I just don't care about Destiny anymore.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, but Destiny 2 is here, and they have a raid that just launched this past week, and this raid is called The Last Wish. It launched in the morning, and a team of 6 players cleared the raid and completed it in a 19-hour play session.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, it says, actually, so I'm reading this article on PC Gamer, and the text says nearly 19 hours, but the title says 18 hours. So they played at least 18 hours straight doing this raid, were the first ones to beat it. And when they beat it, they confirmed it. Bungie confirmed it. They got a big, huge, like, WWE, like, in-game badge to showcase that they were the winners of it.
Wow.
And with that, it unlocked a slew of new content for everybody in the thing. So
in the game or in the raid?
In the game.
Okay.
In the game, yeah. So
that's
the characters themselves, they got the belt. They also got an exclusive in-game emblem, and they will be eligible to order a custom raid jacket. So they also get the exotic fusion rifle, 1,000 voices, which unleashes a giant continuous beam of death.
So that is cool that they actually give you like actual real life swag for doing something like this.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's real life swag. It sounds like
you said they get to order a jacket.
Well, they'll be eligible to order a custom raid. Well, maybe it is a real jacket. I was thinking like raid jacket, like it's just a jacket in the like an in-game jacket.
I feel like they give you a real thing because
would be cool.
Like near when Destiny 2 launched, they had that geocache thing where you could take a pin and stuff. That was actual like real swag that you can take. You find, remember that?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's cool. It's cool. Like this stuff's cool. Like that's actually really good on Bungie.
Yeah.
For them to do something like that, especially getting like real stuff and being the first. Man, 18 hours, like they ever go to the restroom or eat or anything? Like,
see, that's what I was wondering.
They have a shit bucket nearby. I mean, obviously they took breaks. They had to have taken breaks.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's a long gaming session. That's like that's like Dungeons and Dragons things for like a whole day.
Yeah.
That's too much. It's too much.
No, that is true. That is very true. In comparison, like they said Vault of Glass took 14 hours, which is understandable because that was like the first raid that Destiny ever brought out. And then Destiny 2's raid, Leviathan, only took 6 hours to figure out. So this one was because of his last 2 encounters, which stumped every raid team for hours on end. Not only that, they were stunned to find another encounter after killing the final boss that they thought was the final boss. They had to, so this is crazy. This is spoiler, but I'm sorry I got to say this because it's hilarious. So after they slayed Riven, they had to crawl inside its corpse, literally rip out its heart and escape with it, which is pretty cool for like knocking out that stuff.
Wow, that's cool.
So after it was done, content unlocked, the Dreaming City, in the Dreaming City, the endgame destination, a new strike called the Corrupted is available. A new quest called the Courier can be picked up from one of the NPCs, complete with a powerful gear drop. And yeah.
They could do something really cool like Ready Player One did.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, here's the first raid, right?
Yeah.
First to beat this gets this cool thing. Cool. Next raid's unlocked, right? So then, you know, everyone can go and do that if they want to.
Right.
Or like they have to progress that way. So it's like, okay, so this raid did it. So the next raid's even harder and even bigger and longer. So it's like, okay, so you get over there, beat that. And it's like a third raid's unlocked. And then like there are tiers to the raids. That way, like there's a bunch of new stuff that can be unlocked and people can get for like completing these things. I think that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Obviously, I get it. Making these raids are sure not the easiest thing to do for Bungie.
No.
Especially for 18-hour experience, like trying to... Yeah.
I'll be curious once people figure it out what the actual timeline is going to be. Like if you know how to do everything, how long it takes from start to finish.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see in a couple of days, like once people get a hang of the rules and like the,
right,
how everything works. I bet you it's still probably pretty long though. Like six hours maybe.
At least.
Yeah.
At least.
That's nuts. Well, that's it. That's going to wrap it up for our video game news this week. If there's something that we missed, we want to hear from you. You should email us at hello@theinnergamer.net and we can talk about it next week. Don't forget, if you like what you hear, please give us a review and rating on Apple Podcast. We'll be back with a discussion topic after the break on what will Blizzard be making next.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
And we're back. Welcome to our discussion segment of the Inner Gamer Podcast. Today we have a discussion in mind, and then we changed our discussion last minute. But the more I've been thinking about the discussion, the more I'm really hyped about it. This is something based off of an article that we saw on PC Gamer about Blizzard. So we are going to discuss what is next for Blizzard as far as where they're going after this. So the article that came out hinted at a bunch of new job listings that they're currently hiring for, many of which are for their existing titles and things like that. But it does mention some hints at hirings for new games that require a passion for co-op games, RPGs, board games, action games, some including first-person and third-person combat. In addition to that, they're looking for a lead senior level designer position that doesn't have many details, but says that it could be, it includes world building from conception to the final stages of polish, meaning that what if they're building another universe entirely? We don't know. But there's a lot of job listings out there. And, you know, we just had the last game release that we had was Battle of Azeroth for World of Warcraft. And before that, we had Overwatch. And that was the main big, huge announcements that were coming out. So Overwatch came out in 2016. So here we are in 2018 and coming towards an end, a cap. What is next for Blizzard? So I'm going to jump in first and foremost into what I think is the most plausible, which is Diablo, the Diablo series, because Diablo 3 came out many, many years ago, back in, 2015, I think, something like that. 2012, I am way off. So Diablo 3 literally came out 6 years ago. So in that time, when it first came out, it wasn't very liked. It had a lot of issues. They fixed it over time, basically updated it, made a bunch of changes, and it became a really well-respected game. But there was a lot of things that didn't really work for it at the onset. Since then, it's come out on every platform. It just came out recently on the Switch. And now we wonder, what will they be doing next? So the obvious choice is probably a Diablo 4, you know, another iteration of that. But what else could they do with the Diablo franchise with Blizzard, knowing their pedigree thus far and what they've been able to make? Where could they go with Diablo?
I really think a good combination of Diablo meets Destiny would be interesting, because you already have like a set number of classes within the Diablo universe that the player can choose in the base game of Diablo 3. So you take that on top of there are certain towns you can go into and get missions, and then there's a bunch of loot and there's a bunch of dungeons. So yes, you can dungeon dive in that. You get a quest to go get different dungeons, and then obviously they progress as you level up, and then, you know, maybe it's even procedurally generated to some degree. And I think that would just be the perfect storm, because it would be first person if you want it to be, or third person, however they want to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And then, well, they say in the listing, and then they want, you know, someone who's
what
good.
Would you prefer for a Diablo game? Would you prefer third or first person?
Honestly, don't care.
Yeah.
I think I'd prefer first person. That's just me coming off of like a Bethesda Oblivion game, you know, like the Elder Scrolls game, like Oblivion or Skyrim. Like I enjoy that. It is nice that you can zoom out in those games. So maybe they have that mechanic too, but I think being immersed in that world up close and personal would be a good change of pace for that. Yeah. Then again, I don't know. At the same time, they have a specific game with a specific following for that kind of gameplay and that game, that changing it may be detrimental.
Yeah.
You know, but I pretty much trust Blizzard with whatever they do at this point. Like,
right,
if they make a game that's Destiny-like in the Diablo 3 or Diablo universe, I mean, I'm pretty much probably going to play it and love it.
Yeah, I think I've never been a huge fan of Diablo, but I understand the benefits of it and the impact that it's had on the gaming industry. And I did play Diablo 3 and really enjoyed myself in it. So I think that would be interesting, because in these shared world type games such as Destiny and then coming soon Anthem, they're all in the same kind of vein. They're kind of sci-fi fantasy worlds. And looking back on a game such as Diablo, which is very much fantasy, hack and slash, not full of guns and weapons and stuff like that, but very, it's a completely different style of game. And I think that would be a really interesting universe to build in a shared world experience. Like to imagine these, because we've never seen Diablo beyond an isometric point of view. And that's what was really interesting about World of Warcraft, is that they evolved Warcraft, which was an RTS, into a World of Warcraft as an MMO, and completely twisted the way that that franchise was seen and viewed. And I was really hyped whenever StarCraft was about to be StarCraft Ghost, and they're working on a first person shooter, or was it third person or first person, whatever it was going to be.
It was
not an RTS. And I was really excited to put myself in the shoes of a single character on the battlefield and play out through a story in that perspective. And so seeing Diablo, which has always been in this one way, possibly to come in this fashion, I think is a really, really cool idea. And there's a lot of potential there. And like you said, the dungeon crawling would be awesome. I mean, like being able to do that. And I think like, I would prefer a third person view, because I think you could be really creative with armor and like decorating your character,
yeah,
in this,
oh,
from,
yeah,
loot drops and things like that. So you want to be able to see that as you're playing through it. And then like when you're doing like hack and slash and stuff like that, it's nice to kind of see your character maneuver,
right,
you know,
right,
in the battle as you're doing things of that nature. And then just to see like the lights and the, because I mean, like that's one thing I like about Diablo as well, is that it's very colorful. And there's a lot, like all the magic and the spells and all the different stuff that happen, like are very, it's, there's a lot of lighting and color that comes
flashy
on the screen. Yeah. And seeing it from a third person perspective, I think would be a really interesting take. But I would love to see that. Apparently, so we also saw an article on NeoGAF that was talking about multiple Diablo titles being in production, one of which they assume is probably the Switch, or not the Switch, but one of which they think is probably the Diablo 4.
Hmm.
But there is also somebody that made mention, there's a user by the name of Lefty1117 that said that there might be a Diablo MMO in the works. But I think more so this shared world kind of game is a more accurate description, because I don't know if they'd want to bring out a competitor to World of Warcraft.
Right.
It's direct competitor.
I think eventually that will happen. But right now, I don't see that being a good way to go. I mean, you don't want to have two similar games. Like, for all intents and purposes, each of their titles kind of has a different style of gameplay. You know,
yeah,
they bring out another Warcraft game, but it was a card game, right?
Right.
So it's not competing with anything they actually have right now. I think everybody wants like a MMO StarCraft game, an MMO Diablo game, like things like that, you know, because that'd be super cool to dive into those worlds like that, especially with having a rich history. And I think if any of them gets it, it's going to be StarCraft and MMO at some point. But I think the writing will be on the wall. Blizzard's done a good job of like keeping WoW at a pretty steady pace throughout all this time. I think 16 years at this point. And it's just like, once that switch is going to happen, they'll probably throw in a new MMO, probably like StarCraft. And I'm sure they already have that in the works or have something in the back burner that's just like ready to launch if WoW starts to wane.
Yeah.
To get people involved, because that's a whole other fan base too for StarCraft. It's a whole other universe. So you're going to have a significant amount of other, well, not significant amount, but other people who are going to want to jump on that bandwagon.
Yeah.
Like you.
Yeah.
Since definitely. You like space and
I love space.
Future stuff.
Yeah, I love it. I like to see them revisit. I mean, I think they need to bring back the ghost idea.
That'd be great. Yeah,
I don't know FPS. What they would do with it, because like a single player game wouldn't really work as much anymore, because I just feel like, you know, they could make it sell really well, but I don't really see Blizzard. Maybe I do. I don't know. I don't ever like picture Blizzard as like amazing, incredible storytellers. I see them as amazing, incredible world builders and amazing, incredible gameplay creators and things of that nature. But I mean, you know more than I do because you've played through World of Warcraft and their stories and stuff like that. How do you feel about their stories in comparison to like other scenarios?
Well, I like their stories in Warcraft 3 and StarCraft.
Yeah.
Like those stories, like those really stood out to me. Obviously, I was younger. More, I mean, for all intents and purposes, some of my first games that I really got into. World of Warcraft, I never really paid attention to the story as much. Like, I know the overall general idea of everything.
Yeah.
And the factions and how they, like, coincide with each other. But, like I said, I'm not a big, like, reader in the world. Like, I just want to experience it, you know?
Yeah.
And so, if there's no cutscenes, I'm not going to necessarily pay attention to it. I don't know how many times. The only time I read the quest was if I couldn't find what I was looking for, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So that's what I'm like wondering is like, if they did go with StarCraft and like, I mean, I feel like they could be capable of producing something akin to like a Mass Effect RPG style game with StarCraft. But like, I feel like that StarCraft universe is so untapped.
Oh yeah.
We've always seen it from the RTS standpoint.
Right. Right.
Overhead view. I mean, like we've been experienced stories and things like that, but their cinematics that they've had for like StarCraft 2 and stuff were awesome.
Yes.
And if they could like push that further in like the gameplay aspect and get more personal with like not just knowing the fact that you have these factions like Protoss and Terran and Zerg, but getting to know like individual characters and people within that those races, would be really, really interesting. I mean, we have some basic understanding of them, but not to the extent that we could.
Right. Exactly.
And
there's a lot of lore at this point.
There really is. And I think that would be a really good action RPG kind of game in some capacity. And I mean, maybe add some either a co-op kind of experience or something that could also, I mean, that would be closer to a Destiny game. But I agree with you that like Diablo is much better served for that kind of game because it's classes and not various races.
Yeah, loot heavy too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very loot heavy for sure. So,
I could see them doing some kind of like Quick Wars thing with the StarCraft shooter, like online multiplayer shooter.
Yeah.
In the same realm as like kind of like Battlefield, but not in such a big scale. I mean, you could have vehicles, I guess, but I could see more of not like an arena, but like, yeah, like a Battlefield,
man,
like a miniature Battlefield. Maybe Call of Duty ish, but not like that kind
of
gameplay
the Battlefield
stuff. But
comparison, there was a game I played a long time ago. This was probably created back in. 1998. It was a computer game called Urban Assault that was incredibly creative for its time. And it was a mix between like an RTS and a first person shooter in that your real time strategy from a ship commanding your troops and building units and things that you would send out to battle the enemy players. But then you could also transport into one of those ships or one of those vehicles on the ground and drive it around and shoot at enemies and just jump back and forth between commanding the battlefield and being one of the players in the battlefield. And so like I make that comparison to StarCraft, in that StarCraft, you've always been the commander of the battlefield. But how cool it'd be to zoom in and be one of those characters, like be one of those Marines that's entering into the force and battling against the Zerg rush that's coming through. Like, just imagine, like, it would be like Left 4 Dead style. Like, you are sitting there as one of the Marines with your soldiers advancing down the front lines, and all of a sudden you see like these Zergs just rushing at you from all sides, and it'd be like a zombie apocalypse kind of experience.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
So I don't know. There's so much they could do with Blizzard and Diablo. I don't think they should do anything. I would love to see more story-based stuff with Overwatch, like just to see them create a single-player story with it.
But at this point, I don't think it would fly that well.
I don't think so either.
Unless they had some pretty badass cinematics and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I think their shorts that they've been doing have been good enough to kind of like give you a hint of like what that story is.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping like maybe they're building up some lore so that they can do something more with Overwatch in the future. Like, I don't know what you get a movie or like build some kind of game experience or game that is a different take on the Overwatch world, but they have all the lore already kind of established and they can just build upon it.
They did a movie and then released Overwatch 2.0. Man, talk about hype. Talk about hype.
As long as they didn't give it to Hollywood, then it'd be
well, good. No, they would need to do it. I mean, they have plenty. I think they have the team to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But we'll see what that would be like. Then we have, we have Heroes of the Storm, but that's basically a culmination of all the characters from all the universes come together. I don't know if I could see that done any other way. Like could they make a first person shooter that is an MMO? Or not an MMO, but like a Heroes of the Storm style that brings in all these characters but into that universe.
They could. But then they'd be competing with Overwatch at that point.
Right.
It'd just be a hero arena shooter.
Yeah. Or like an MMO, like that was the world of Blizzard.
Right.
You know, that's like, here's all the characters of all the things and stuff like that.
I just don't see how that would work out.
Yeah.
I think anything Blizzard would do at this point, like the writing's on the wall. I think we can pretty much guesstimate like what they will not touch.
Yeah.
I mean, Overwatch, I think, was the kind of outlier overall, but now, like, they brought that in. They've done it so good.
But that was the thing that they were missing, you know, was they need a shooter. They didn't have a shooter. Now they got a shooter. But I'm trying to think if there's anything that they are missing. Like, because, like, they're very good at, like, they're not tapping into the subgenres. They're tapping into whole genres. I mean, I guess a MOBA can be considered a subgenre of an RTS, but it's not really. It is and it isn't, I guess, but it's more so its own genre in itself.
Right.
Like, what else have they not tapped into? I mean, they can't do a racing game. That wouldn't happen, but like simulation, I don't think they would tap into that.
I mean, like an Oblivion or Cyberpunk type thing. They haven't done this full on world scale. Like a scale player
action RPG.
Yeah. Like, that would be interesting.
Yeah.
Hell, they could create a new world that way if they really wanted to. And that could open up a lot of stuff.
That's true.
Like, I would like to see a cyberpunk open world RPG type thing.
Yeah. That would be nice.
I just don't know what they would go off of. But like, going off of what they have now, I just don't know what they would want to pick. I mean, I would like to see something with StarCraft. Again, I just don't think they've touched that property enough. I mean, it's good. Like, they have a good, you know, profile of like that stuff up top with all the other like books and things they have. I don't know if they have comics of that or not, but
I think so.
Seeing something like deeper in that world, it's just hard. How do you differentiate the three factions? You know, like people want to play that. I feel like someone's going to play Protoss, someone's going to play Zerg. And how does that all work together? Some of those stories are better than others. I mean, I think humans telling the story or being the focus is pretty good. Man, I don't know.
Yeah.
Even Anthem would be cool. That would be cool.
Even Anthem?
An Anthem style one.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that would be,
if you look at the Warhammer series, they've taken basically not really, I mean, I don't know the story too much, but they've taken aspects of some of these like factions and have made games about that.
Yeah.
So instead of being like you're like the typical Marine commander guy, and one's like, what was it, Deathwing is when you go in and you exterminate the stuff, so you're more of a hulking brute guy that has more armor, you're slower, but you have like these badass weapons, and you have guys that go in. So it's more of like a Vermintide type game, but in the Warhammer universe. So maybe they take some of these factions from some of these games and just explore that. But I don't know how well that would pan out overall.
But probably like a single player focused thing.
Yeah, single player.
So I was trying to think how they could take those different races and make it into a, make it into a shared world thing.
Right.
Without making it super weird.
Right.
I don't know if they could. Well, let's talk about, so we've talked about all their existing titles. Let's talk about what new thing could they explore and do that they've never really done before. Like, you know, there's a bunch of different types of things out there, but they did mention that they might be building a new world, like entirely. So we have StarCraft, sci-fi, space. We have Diablo, Heaven, Hell, fantasy kind of style. Warcraft is very traditional fantasy. And then Overwatch, which is like also kind of sci-fi, but more
grounded in reality,
sci-fi in a way. So we've done sci-fi and fantasy, but what else could be? I'd like to see something that, so the one thing that they do a lot of stylized kind of things.
Yeah.
I'd like to see what their take would be on something that's more realistic and in the sense, like it's still like, what if they did something akin to like a Game of Thrones style grit? So it's still fantasy, but it's not as, I mean, like World of Warcraft is very cartoony looking and it's right, graphic and right. its design. And if they did something like akin to a Game of Thrones thing where like your combat, like there's not, I thought there was something on my leg. I was like, what the hell is that? And it's just like a cord. So we're good. But like if there was something along the lines of, because Game of Thrones, like there is magic, like dark magic and stuff like that. But it's not really something that you see, like when they're battling with swords and arrows and fire and then dragons on occasion, right?
Right.
But they're not doing anything that's unrealistically unbelievable. That could be an interesting twist for them to jump into that world a little bit.
Right.
What do you think about that?
I mean, would it be dark? Like Game of Thrones?
Yeah. No, it would be dark. Because StarCraft, in a way, is dark. Diablo is dark.
Yeah.
But Diablo is magic and stuff like that.
Right,
this
right.
is not magic. This would be more... I mean, this could be... I don't know what kind of game it could be. But I mean, if it was a shared open... It was like a massive world. Like, it could be a Destiny-like shared world experience where you play as a character in this world that, you know, is trying to, you know, you're part of a particular group of people that's trying to bring law and order to a world of chaos. And, but you're just like one guy amidst this whole party of people. I don't know.
I see what you're saying. I don't know. There's a certain maturity level to like something Game of Thrones like.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, if it's like it, then yeah, I mean, I can see how you could kind of scale back that maturity to a degree where it's more teen-based and younger, or I guess just more, I guess they focus on teens really.
Yeah.
Overall. I don't know. I feel like they could do something that's more, because they have like two things that are kind of medieval. They already have two things that are kind of futuristic. Obviously, Overwatch and StarCraft are worlds apart in the sense of like time and stuff. I would say Diablo and Warcraft are similarly in the same realm. Similarly.
Yeah.
Something more modern, something like Cops versus Robbers or something like that.
Nah, I wouldn't want that from Blizzard.
Well, no, it'd be more of like a shooter thing. So like Cops versus Robbers. I mean, I'm just using very general terms here. Like I don't know how to paint this really, but having that multiplayer aspect of I'm going to be cops, or like maybe Payday type thing, but set it in, you know, a very Blizzardy, you know, color scheme and, you know, Overwatchy. And it's just like, hey, choose this, choose that. I don't know. Like very anime.
Yeah, I'm not feeling that.
Okay. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to feel something. Like, they already have two medieval stuff,
I don't know,
two futuristic stuff.
Yeah.
Like, they need something a little different to put in the middle.
I could see, like, what if they did something? Because I think what they're really good at is they're good at creating worlds. They're good at creating things that don't exist,
right?
That we're not aware of. But I like, none of these things are realistic. You know, like Overwatch is far from realistic. Like nobody out there, you know, is like, you know, you don't have gerbils that are running around inside of a ball as a wrecking ball,
right? Right.
Mixed in with like a D.Va. You know, it's very, very imaginative and diverse and stuff like that. Whereas Diablo is like heaven and hell, like that kind of like crazy fantasy stuff. And like they all create these new things. And I'm trying to think,
like, to create something that hasn't been talked about, something that hasn't been created yet.
Like, what about, did you ever see the movie The Island?
Yeah.
What if it was something like that?
Like what?
Where there's like this virtual like utopia world that you're in, and like you know that like it's a utopian society that everybody goes to and they like want to be there, and like that's like the centerpiece of what's happening. But then there's some like sinister aspects to it, and you are part of this resistance that's trying to like give truth to. It's like the world itself is imaginative and creative and it looks super idyllic and amazing and gorgeous and beautiful, but then there's like this dark undertone to it that is not quite clear, but you are part of this group that's trying to find out what that thing is. And it would be, so you as this person of the resistance is one of like many people in this space that's trying to break through and give light. And it could be like a live service game where, you know, over time you see like there's various pieces of there's milestones that happen during the course of the game's lifespan where like maybe, you know, it starts out where it's just like this beautiful, pristine utopia, and then you reach a milestone in the game service by playing to a certain point, and then it unlocks this like new kind of component of the world that has kind of broke through some of the beauty and shown like the dark secrets behind this beautiful world you've been playing in forever. And so like you as players are trying to go over the correct, like, so instead of like you play Destiny, you're fighting what are clearly bad guys. You are in essence the bad guy amidst this world of people that are living through this life that is very like, they think this utopia is utopia and it's great and wonderful, but you know it's not. So you and your team of people that you're playing with in this cooperative shared world experience are trying to reveal what that is. So to all the people that you're playing against that are like the AI and part of the story, they look at you as the bad guy, even though you are actually not the bad guy, but they don't realize that because they're being controlled by like the 1% or the...
This is really complicated.
It is. But it'd be super cool.
That would be cool.
Like, I mean, I feel like that's like something that... That's a realistic take on something that like Blizzard could come up with. Like they right. could take this thing that doesn't exist anywhere, you've never heard of it, and just like make it new and different.
How about this?
Okay.
I got another idea. What if they took, it was a spinoff of Overwatch, right? We already know there was some great war ahead of time, right? Between the robots and stuff. And even now, after the fact, there's these factions that have been created, right? And there's people like, what if they did like a CSGO? Not definitely not CSGO, but like good guys against bad guys, faction against faction, you know, in the Overwatch world where all you had to do was battle it out for, you know, points and stuff. With a bunch of different map types and stuff like that. That's why they're focused on FPS. You clearly know the factions, and it kind of adds to the Overwatch world.
Yeah.
And there's no heroes. It's just people and guns, like military. It's like
basically Battlefield and Overwatch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not like super excited about it, but like.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you probably would if they made it. It'd be fucking amazing.
Yeah. It could be. Yeah. Yeah, I'd be interested to see what they would do if they like went bigger with first person, like a first person shooter.
Right, right.
Expanded that.
I mean, yours is like huge
outward a little bit. Yeah, I was just trying to think of like what they would. I mean, because that's what I was talking about isn't necessarily any gameplay related stuff. It's just
right,
like
it's giant story.
What would they do that is not already been done?
Right,
and it's not the sci-fi fantasy that we talked about. This is more like, real. This is more like Star Trek to Star Wars kind of idea in a way. So it's a little bit more realistic, but I like the idea of this utopian society because we're doing what we do a lot with these genres of things where there's like apocalyptic, like Mad Max and Borderlands and all these things are like, and Fallout, you know, it's all like post-apocalyptic,
right?
Shit's gone to shit. And that's all it is. Or we have things that are cyberpunk, which is like this futuristic society that's really, really dark and gritty and stuff like that. But what if none of that was that way? What if it was like really nice and beautiful and awesome, but there was some grit to it? Kind of like Bioshock Infinite.
Mm.
You know, Bioshock Infinite, when you first get there, it's like, oh my gosh, this place is amazing, but it's not.
Right.
Like there's something right there that's just not right. I think that kind of idea, but expanded beyond just like a single player game into right like something new. But kind of like when we were talking about the game that you and I wanted to make for a while, like it was something that was an ongoing service before like live services were a thing.
Right.
Like it was going to be something where you take control of territories and you could eventually take control of planets. This would be that same kind of deal, but Blizzard would be controlling some of that aspect of like its progression and its evolvement over time.
Right.
Kind of akin to Tides of War. Cause like with Tides of War, like as you play in Battlefield 5, you're going to be unlocking new pieces of content and things that are going to show you a different aspect of the war that you hadn't experienced yet in the game. So this would be that same way. Yeah.
There's a lot could be done here.
There is.
Hopefully some of that sticks or some of that is right.
Yeah, seriously. Seriously. Well, okay. Awesome. Well, that's our predictions for Blizzard. I mean, will they revisit? I want to know what everybody else thinks. Like, do you think they're going to revisit some of these other titles and take them in a different genre? Are we going to see Diablo 4? I think it's pretty confident, but like, do you think we'll see another deeper version or a different genre take on Diablo or StarCraft or Overwatch? What do you think that could be? And then if you have any ideas for what Blizzard could do with a brand new world in a different space and, where could they go if it's not sci-fi, if it's not fantasy, what's the next step? So let us know, shoot us an email, give us your feedback. And anything else, Austin? No,
man, we covered it all.
All right, well, that's going to conclude our discussion this week. If there's a topic you want to hear us talk about, please let us know at hello@theinnergamer.net. don't forget to check out our video clips, not of this segment but of our news, every Thursday at youtube.com/theinnergamer. And yeah, are we still doing the video to donate $3 now? Okay. So that's basically, if you just donate to us, you get cool shit. So just donate. And
how about the cause?
We'll make it awesome. So thank you. And we're going to take a quick break and come back with our video game releases.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Looking forward to next week. Let's talk about our upcoming video game releases. We have one game coming out on the 25th of September on PC exclusively. This is Pathfinder Kingmaker. Austin, I didn't know what the hell Pathfinder was until you brought up the fact that we might play a tabletop role-playing game called Pathfinder.
That's right.
And that's what this is based off of.
Boom.
So this is the first isometric party-based computer RPG set in the Pathfinder fantasy universe. You can enjoy a classic RPG experience inspired by games like Baldur's Gate, Fallout 1, Fallout 2, and Arcanum. Explore and conquer the stolen lands and make them your kingdom. I'm not into this game because it's probably too intense for me and it's too RPG, but those out there that really like RPGs, this game is there for you and more power to you. Austin's probably going to play. He's going to love it because he's all about those hardcore RPG games, but I'm not a fan.
Not really. just not really, actually. Sorry.
I thought I knew you this entire time.
We'll see.
I'm just kidding. No, it looks pretty good, but it's too intense for me.
Looks
so
kind of
I'm ignoring it.
Like that one game we played.
Pillars of Eternity?
Yeah. And Divinity.
Yeah. So that's going to wrap up our show this week. Be sure and check us out next Tuesday for more from your favorite video game podcasts. Visit theinnergamer.net for our latest episodes, blogs, videos, and social channels. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or tell a friend.
We also have a Patreon set, which is a way for you, our listeners, to donate to the cause in order to bring you all the great content you want to see and hear every week. Even $1 a month will help us keep this content coming at you every week, every month, every year. Plus, if you support us, we have some awesome rewards waiting for you, such as being guests on the podcast or getting exclusive content. So head on over to theinnergamer.net and click donate to contribute. I'm Austin Morales.
I'm Brady Noski.
And you've been listening to InnerGamer, guys. We'll catch you next week. Jump into this, Brett.
Hang on a second. I gotta check something real fast.
Brett's gotta check something real fast. Damn it, Brett.
I gotta check my fantasy football team.
This is what this cast has become.
Shit. I'm losing right now. Son of a bitch. These guys better score more. I'm gonna be pissed off if they don't.